Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily, twice daily in this instance, podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth is here with me on the roof yet again of Parliament after another dramatic day in the Commons. So the Prime Minister has failed to get the sufficient votes that he needed to call a general election. He had a motion under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, and it was 298 MPs who voted in favour when you need more than 400 in order to get the two-thirds majority. So Boris Johnson is not heading for an election, James. Does this mean we're not going to get an election this autumn?
I still think we're going to get an election this October, because there has been some confusion about this during the day. But Jeremy Corbyn was quite clear in this debate that once this extension bill has got royal assent, which we expect, despite some developments we can talk about later, which we expect will probably have happened by Monday, Labour would then be happy to vote for an election. Now, there is some debate over whether Boris Johnson could do this again via the Fixed Term Parliament Act, or whether he wouldn't be able to do that now because he's done it once and failed, and so that wouldn't be allowed, or whether he'd have to try and get a bill through and kind of rush it through the Commons and the Lords. But I sense at the moment that that is possible. I also think that's a recognition of political reality on Jeremy Corbyn's part, because for Labour to carry on trying to block an election, it was noticeable tonight that Boris Johnson, who wasn't on his best form at PMQ, seemed quite discombobulated. As soon as this vote came through, he was up making points of order, and he was much cheerier than he was earlier. He was having great fun mocking Jeremy Corbyn for being the first opposition leader in British history to turn down the chance of an election.
Yeah.
Then he got up so pleased with this point to make a second point of order to say that Jeremy Corbyn had voted confidence in him, Boris Johnson. And I think you sense that the more time passes with Labour trying to block an election, the more the Tories will sharpen these attacks. And I think at the moment, only frankly people like you and me, Isabel, and people who listen to this podcast are really noticing this stuff. It's a detail.
There are many people who listen to this podcast, to be fair.
The lights have just gone out on us, which is
making Parliament even more threatening on a completely dark rooftop now.
If we don't come down. But what strikes me is, if this goes on for, as the people are suggesting, Labour should not do this until October the 19th, for 5 weeks, the public is going to begin to notice that. And I think that would be a bad look for Labour.
I also think that, as you say, if it's going to keep going on and there's not a sense that someone's in control, that's when I think even voters who just really want politicians to leave them alone would quite like to be able to offer a view on what sort of politicians should be in charge. I think Boris Johnson looked more comfortable this evening, partly because he was back on his sort of familiar territory of being political, of goading his opponents, whereas at Prime Minister's questions he was being asked to furnish details of something, which was, you know, his confidence that he would secure a deal and that European leaders were becoming more amenable to that, and he just looked uncomfortable because he's never been very good at that. He was never good at that sort of thing at Foreign Office questions, and that obviously had far less pressure than the bear pit that the House of Commons chamber becomes when you're at Prime Minister's questions. So he didn't have a very comfortable session, did he? But you think that today has ended on a good note for him in a strange way?
I think the number 10 knew that they were going to lose this vote for quite some time. It does give them something to talk about. And also, they have an answer to this problem. When people say, you've lost control, you're in office but not in power, that jibe that was famously thrown at John Major that is now kind of thrown about so often in politics. You know, he says, well, we want an election because we think, and it also makes them sound confident, we think the country would agree with us and give us a majority. I do think the challenge for him is going to be, in this election, he's going to maintain that he wants a deal, and he's going to need a crisp kind of answer about how he gets a deal. Boris Johnson addressed all the remaining members of the Tory party at the 1922 committee this evening, and I was talking to one Tory MP who voted for Jeremy Hunt, who is very opposed to leaving on no deal, even though he didn't join with the rebels last night. They said they thought he was much better in the 22 than he had been at PMQs about explaining how he might get a deal, what he was prepared to do to get a deal. And I think he's going to need to have a kind of crisp answer on that, because obviously the Tory electoral coalition that they're trying to build together, it involves saying to people, you know, I am going to deliver Brexit on October the 31st, which is the kind of attempt to try and squeeze the Brexit party. But then there's an attempt to kind of reassure Tory Remainers by saying, but, you know, and I want my preferences for a deal. And I think the other big thing in the message you're going to see, which you saw tonight in this vote on the election, is there's going to be a lot, and I think one of the reasons why they want to have this election in that week of the European summit is, who do you want going to Brussels to negotiate on the UK's behalf, me or Jeremy Corbyn? They are convinced that that line, who do you want, Boris Johnson or Jeremy Corbyn, that helps them as much as Brexit in trying to put together an electoral coalition.
Now, you mentioned the 1922 committee, and one of the other features of tonight's meeting was that MPs were upset about their colleagues being expelled, and Daniel Kaczynski was upset in a different way, in that he wanted to make sure that these people weren't going to be allowed back after losing the whip, and he got rounded on by colleagues. And that's been a real feature of today, hasn't it? We've had that letter also from the One Nation group of Conservatives speaking on behalf of sort of trying to pray in aid of those Conservative MPs who lost their whip. And we've got three cabinet members who are members of that group. We've got Amber Rudd, Nicky Morgan and Robert Buckland. What's going on there?
So I think this is a very awkward situation, because Boris Johnson has voted against a free line. When he voted against Theresa May's deal, he twice voted against a free line whip. It is always very difficult for people who have rebelled, as Jeremy Corbyn has discovered, to then try and impose discipline on their colleagues. It is particularly difficult when Boris Johnson has taken a very draconian step. Now, there is a cold logic to this, which is, if the Tories are to win a majority at this election, even the most optimistic Tory doesn't think it's going to be big, and the election could be slightly rendered pointless if they end up exactly where they are now, because they win a majority, but then there are still 20 to 30 Tory MPs opposed to Boris Johnson's Brexit strategy. And that means, you know, winning the election doesn't actually mean that he's won anything. So I think that is why he took the decision. But it is a very tricky, awkward moment, because he himself had rebelled, and now he's saying, right, off you go, kicked out. I think there is a kind of... I was talking to one Tory MP about the Daniel Kaczynski moment, and they were saying that the Daniel Kaczynski's thing was to talk about it. And because even people who kind of reluctantly accept it, which this person thought most Tory MPs did, they don't like it.
Yeah.
They'd rather no one mentioned it. It's a kind of slight revulsion.
Awkward sort of family moment there, and steps around.
And I think that is the tricky thing. But I think the interesting question now is, how many of these MPs stand again at the next election? I think the bulk of them will stand down.
Yeah.
But we wait to see what happens.
I mean, I've been talking to a few of them this afternoon, and they are saying that they are going to stand as Conservatives, which raises all sorts of legal issues. I mean, they are insisting that they are totally up for a legal battle with the party about their entitlement to stand as Conservatives. But they also have the Electoral Commission to contend with, because the Electoral Commission doesn't allow you to stand as a candidate with a name that could be confused with another party, which is why independent Conservative is not acceptable either. And so it would just be very interesting to see if they work out how to follow through with this threat. The two MPs I've quoted in my piece on Coffee House are Rory Stewart and Stephen Hammond, both of whom have said, I am going to stand as a Conservative and I don't care what the party does about this. Well, the party say they can't.
Yeah, and I think from the point of view of kind of CCHQ, they won't want this to drag on, because they want this done before the election campaign gets underway. The last thing they want is a reminder of these divisions. But I think they want to try and say, oh, look, yes, we were divided over Brexit, but now we've come to a common position. If this is all rumbling on through the campaign, it would be less than ideal. I also think that there are, interestingly, we had a piece about this on Coffee House, but interestingly, I was just speaking to another pollster, and people think that some of these candidates would have a chance running as independents. I mean, they could certainly have an influence upon the result.
Now, one question that everyone is asking on an hourly basis as new strange things happen, I think probably the strangest thing that happened today was Parliament appeared to accidentally resurrect Theresa May's Brexit deal. And that was because the Tories didn't put tellers up on this amendment that had been tabled by Stephen Kinnock, which was to give MPs another vote, another chance to vote on that popular withdrawal agreement from the former Prime Minister. And therefore, the division was cancelled and the amendment passed. And there's some speculation about whether that was deliberate. That's interesting. European Research Group MPs who I've spoken to this evening have said they thought it was an accident, whereas there are people around the government who are trying to put out that it was deliberate to undermine the bill.
It is classic. There is now an argument about whether this is proof of the government's incompetence or cunning genius, which is one of the two, because some people think it's a poison pill for this bill when it goes to the Lords and means it might not get through before prorogation. Other people think it's a shambles and they just forgot. I mean, it is... Yeah, but I mean, nothing better sums up the odd nature of our times than that Theresa May's withdrawal agreement has got further tonight than it ever got when she was Prime Minister.
But one of the questions that keeps coming up is this all a grand plan? And one of the things that we all get told when we start out in journalism is most of our stories, as much as we'd like it to be otherwise, are going to be about cock-ups rather than conspiracies. But I wonder, are we in the middle of a grand conspiracy that just looks like a cock-up? Or is the government actually lurching from decision to decision and doesn't really know what it's doing?
I think the government knows what it's doing to the extent that the political strategy of Number 10 is to get to an election and win it with a Conservative Party that is fully on board with Boris Johnson's Brexit strategy. I think that is the kind of simplest explanation of what's happened. Now, I think if their threat to deselect people had worked and all the rebels had backed down and this extension bill had failed, that would have been their ultimate outcome. But they never thought that was going to happen. I think that is what they are aiming for now. But I don't buy the argument that his great hope is that somehow he's going to find a way to make all MPs vote for Theresa May's deal at the last minute or something like that. I don't think that is the plan. But I think what is confusing things is there's an awful lot of parliamentary tactics going on all sides. And we are operating at the outer edges of a constitution. And no one quite... I mean, you know, the problem is... I made this point before in the podcast. Constitutional lawyers are like economists. You know, you know who you go to get the opinion you want. And everyone is beginning to get the opinions they want. And that is confusing the debate. I think ultimately... I don't think it's going to be possible to hold out against the election until October 19th, until Boris Johnson has to write the letter, which is a plan of some MPs, which is on the opposition benches, which is, why don't we keep him here as Prime Minister, kind of almost captive, and then make him write the extension letter on October the 19th, or send the police to arrest him if he doesn't, kind of thing. And that will destroy him with Brexit Party voters, and then we can safely have the election. I think that is too clever by half.
Well, thank you, James. Thanks, everyone, for listening to yet another rooftop session from Coffee House Shots. And we'll be back with more tomorrow.